Small business, big advice. Welcome to the Very Good Marketing Podcast, where small business owners, employees, or just marketing fanatics can learn how to grow a business on a budget without wasting any money.
Welcome to the Very Good Marketing Podcast. My name is Shannon and I'm here with small business marketing consultant and expert Amy Miosevic. And today's episode is going to break down the Very Good Marketing model a bit more and answer some of the questions we've received about it. So Amy, let's start by recapping what the model is.
So a couple episodes ago, I introduced the Very Good Marketing model, which was a little bit hard because it's such a visual model and it's hard to imagine what the actual framework looks like without an image. So what I'm going to do is put a link to the image and a bit more information about it in the description of the all the episodes so that you guys can access and actually see the picture. And if you're watching this on YouTube or Spotify, I'll make sure that the actual image is sitting on the bottom of the episodes too so you can see it. But the model itself is a systems thinking model for marketing. So when it comes to marketing your small business, in fact, any business to be fair, there is a customer journey that all of your customers go through. We've broken it down into the five main touch points for simplicity. It's taken us a long time to boil it down to just five, but we've tested it with over 150 clients in lots of different industries, lots of different sizes, and it really does simplify a lot of the marketing language and it kind of consolidates the frameworks out there and the different methods in a way that makes it easy for everyone to understand, regardless of whether your expertise is in marketing or whether you are a founder or an owner of a business with your technical craft elsewhere. So the touch points in the system are there are when it goes from someone is a stranger through to when they're a visitor, a lead, a customer, and a fan. And the marketing methods that you use are actively bringing someone from a stranger to a visitor, from a visitor to a lead, from a lead to a customer to a fan. And then what we do at the end is we call it turning a fan into jam, which is the most important part of the whole system. And that is using your lifetime customers to generate further business for your business. So that's the model in a nutshell, but we've actually received quite a few questions about the framework since we published our first few episodes. So we thought we'd kind of talk a little bit more about it so that you guys can get a bit more familiar with what this is and hopefully have a think about how this model is implemented in your business and what it means for the marketing techniques you may already be using or ones that you're thinking about implementing in the future.
Great. So for myself, you keep referring to this systems thinking. Can you break down, like, what is systems thinking? What does that mean?
Systems thinking is a way of looking at all the parts that make up a whole. So if you were looking at the way that manufacturing process worked, so I just watched Enola Holmes 2.
That's a great film.
Yeah, did you
I've watched it.
Yeah. Okay, so you know how they were making matchsticks?
Yeah.
Great. So I know the matchsticks were killing the girls, but let's just go back to
all that aside, murder aside.
So the system goes from not having any matchsticks to having matchsticks, and the manufacturing process involved, you know, cutting up the wood, separating it into different pieces, cutting it to size, dipping it in different elements until they end up with a matchstick head, grouping it together in numbers, putting it inside a box, packaging up the box, and then sending it out. And in a simple form, that is the system that goes into putting together matches. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a system is really just how something works. So when you're looking at a system, often there are weaknesses in the whole process which could affect the total outcome. So in this case, they were using phosphorus as the matchstick heads, and it turns out it was killing people. So there was a breakdown in their system. They worked out exactly what it was, but really a system is a sum of all of its parts. So the reason that we've introduced a system in marketing is because it doesn't really exist already. There aren't any holistic frameworks that examine the customer journey as a full system and try and identify what pieces make up the whole process, because it's really variable. Every business has a different customer. Every customer is unique.
Yeah.
But if you can look at it at high level enough, and you'll notice that a lot of the stuff we talk about when it comes to this model is not really technical. We don't go into the specifics of language and that kind of stuff that's actively used. But it's instead just looking at how someone will move through your customer journey system to get to the end, and then trying to identify what bits might be letting them down. Because not everyone's going to go from a stranger to being a fan. They're going to drop off somewhere. We just have to figure out where it is. Mm-hmm. That's the whole premise of the model. And a lot of organizations build up processes and systems across their entire business and codify it so their business can operate the same. So a couple episodes ago, we talked about the E-Myth. It's a really popular book, and he talks about pies, etc. And what he recommended that all businesses do is codify their processes and their systems that exist so that the business can be scaled or duplicated, or it can be grown or shrunk down, and everyone does everything the same way, which is going to make sure that the business ends up in success. So that's what a system is, and it's very rare that it exists within an organization because marketing is hard to capture because it is frequently changing.
Yeah, and you've referred to fans quite a lot over the last few episodes, and you've mentioned how important they are, but can you explain to us why? Why are fans so valuable to this system and to this process?
So if you work with a marketing company, or if you're working on marketing, it's very rare that you kind of extend your thinking all the way out to a fan. Often you'll just stop at like a customer. So when a lead gets delivered and you have a customer, you kind of stop considering anything beyond that, mm-hmm. you know, marketing. I mean, in some instances, marketing ends at a lead. And then it's the sales process that gets someone from a lead to a customer. But extending that out to a fan, I think, is actually really important, because a fan or a lifetime customer is worth so much to your business. It costs 5 to 6 times as much to convert a stranger into a customer as it does to turn a fan back into a customer. Does that make sense?
It does. Yes. And I think for me, an area of business or a type of business that does this kind of backwards sometimes is like your internet and phone providers.
Yeah.
I always see promotions for, you know, discounts for new customers, deals for new customers, bundles, yeah. packages, all this stuff. And like for me, I've been a customer of one provider for 13 years. So, and As a long-standing customer, it's like, well, where's my bonus?
Yeah.
What do I get for being so loyal and for having paid, I don't know how much money over that time, you know? And you kind of wonder, as a customer and a consumer, am I valued? And does this company care that I go to them repeatedly as a consumer?
And often it's on like the reactive foot. So if you went to them to complain, they might come back and try and offer you some kind of deal.
Yeah.
There isn't a lot of proactive stuff that I think companies focus on, especially small businesses, because it's quite time consuming and it can cost money. But if you can compare what that customer is worth to how much it costs to bring a new person in, you might be surprised. So a lifetime customer, and it depends what industry you're in obviously, but a lifetime customer will buy from you again and again. Mm-hmm. So their value over the relationship with your business isn't one purchase, it could be 100 purchases.
Yeah.
So their value to your company could be $5,000 instead of just $10. And they do seem extreme, but let me just give you an analogy. I go to the same coffee shop. I mean, we all go to the same coffee shop.
Every day.
Every day, twice a day.
Yeah.
Which we shouldn't. We should bring coffee from home.
It's a lot of money. We spend a lot of money.
But we spend like $5 twice mm-hmm. a day. So that's $10 a day. We go 5 days a week. That's a lot of money we spend
on
coffee.
And there's always at least three of us.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So if we think about how much we're actually worth to that business over the course of a year, it's quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And we've been in this office for 2 years now. And so suddenly we're on 2 years. We're not going to leave for another 2 years. You know, realistically. So that's 4 years worth of $50 a week. That's an incredible amount of money that we're now worth to this coffee shop. So when we come in and they do things like give us coffees for free, or when they remember our names, or when they like every now and then they'll give us like, they'll slide us a cookie or whatever. That's the kind of stuff that helps us remember them and go back again and again and choose them over all the other 6 or 7 coffee shops in the strip. And the quality of coffee makes a difference. And I think a lot of people are so focused on bringing new people in that these guys have gone, okay, well, if I just make sure the coffee is great quality, if I make sure that the service is on point, if I make sure we remember all our regulars, they've tried to create a bit of, I guess, a system for their lifetime customers to keep them coming back, because it's going to cost them so much less to give away a free cookie every week than it is to actually advertise to convince new people to come over to their coffee shop. Yeah. So that's fans in a nutshell. And a lot of companies, so like a lot of phone providers I've noticed do like point systems now.
Not mine.
Well, I know that Telstra has like Telstra points. Mm-hmm. And so they've introduced a point system to reactivate their or reward their lifetime customers and their fans. And it's not a lot, but they've done it so that people kind of gamify how much they spend with a company, and they'll want to collect points and they'll spend it. And reward systems are a really great way of valuing and showing value to your fans and re-engaging them so that they can purchase again.
Incentivizing purchases.
And stopping them from leaving. So fans are really important. And I've worked with clients before where they have a huge database of people that have purchased from them in the past, and they just forget to contact them. If you don't have a big budget for marketing and you focus on the customers that you have already or have had, you could create a whole heap of wealth for your business and a whole lot more sales every month just by nurturing those relationships more.
Yeah, and nurturing those relationships, I guess, it doesn't have to be expensive. It can just be a regular email, like having a touch point with those customers every week or every month, just so that you're sort of staying front of mind and you're staying relevant
to them. Definitely. Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to be anything crazy at all. So that's why I talk about fans a lot, and that's why they are at the end of our system. And when I say turning fans into jam, that's exactly what I mean. It's just a no-brainer, because often it doesn't cost any money at all.
Yeah, so great. So going back to the system on a whole, how is it different to the other systems and models that we may have seen out there? And, you know, I feel like you have touched on it, that no system has the complete holistic view that this system has. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think it is hard to put this holistic overview onto marketing when there are so many things in place. But for small business, it's a little bit easier because everything is just on a bit of a smaller scale. A lot of the time, everything is managed by one person and they look after the entire model. You've not got a marketing team, a sales team, a customer service team. It's really kind of managed by the leadership team or the owner. Mm-hmm. And making and producing frameworks that apply to micro and small businesses is rare. And I can prove it to you. Pick up any business book, and they'll always refer to the leadership team or, you know, the C-suite, and all the case studies in there are about Apple and Google and, you know, Microsoft, and everyone has those stories about, you know, success and growth, and they align themselves with big business. So it's not as fun or interesting to capture stories and study the behaviors and principles that have led to small business success, because mm-hmm. it's the big business success where a lot of these frameworks and models have a really big impact. So no one really writes a lot of stuff for micro businesses and small businesses. And at the same time, the marketing models, I think, that are out there are a little bit too, we call them pie in the sky. So
what does that mean?
Well, they're quite theoretical. So if you think about what you learn at university, if you did marketing, you'd learn about like the four P's. So if you were to get advice from a marketing consultant, and they might sit down with you and say, let's investigate the four P's of your business and your price and your promotion and your product or whatever. Once you've done that, then what do you do?
Yeah.
The same with, you know, funnel models. And the theory behind funnels, you know, acquisition and conversion and prospecting and all that kind of stuff, it makes sense, but the language is so technical that once you've done it and you've looked at it and you go, oh yeah, I understand, like consideration.
Where do you go?
What do you do now? Like, what numbers are you measuring? Where's the rest of it? Like, what am I doing to get people in the funnel? And all this kind of language I find quite overwhelming and not very practical. So when we say pie in the sky, what I mean is there's so many models and books and information out there that is either really theoretical and conceptual, consumer behavior, like patterns like that, marketing theories, they're all quite high level. They don't have that practical component to them that I think our model does.
Yeah.
They don't tell someone what to do next. They just tell them how to think about something, which
doesn't break it down. There's no process to follow or steps to say, oh, okay, so I've done this and now this is the next step.
Yeah, and I don't know about you. Sometimes I read stuff and I get really overwhelmed because I've consumed all this info and then I feel like I have it all, but I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
So,
I agree. No, it's crazy. It's very daunting. And, you know, we work in this space. So if we're finding it overwhelming and there's so much information, and then I can't imagine what somebody whose specialty is not marketing.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're just trying to get some more customers on the hook and take care of their current customers. I can't imagine what they're thinking when they see these words thrown around.
It would just be, it would be great. And I think you'd get excited at first, but then over time, I think it would be quite overwhelming to figure out how to kind of bring it to life, especially if you don't know who to contact and where to find help. So by the end of this podcast, I hope that everyone listening will get a really good sense of exactly what their steps are. And I've got a step today. So that's very exciting, because I know we haven't added in a lot of really practical steps in the last couple episodes. But one of the things I want to mention about other frameworks and kind of this model is what I'm teaching is so simple that a lot of you will already understand it and know what it means. Like, you're not going to look at it and go, I've never heard this word before. Like, it's really simple stuff. It's just shifting the way that you think about it, I think, that makes a difference. And the most powerful part of this is this level of understanding I think it can deliver. And the way that I talk about this often is a concept called the hierarchy of understanding. I heard about this in a podcast a long time ago, and I haven't been able to find a lot of literature on it since. But the hierarchy of understanding talks about how we as consumers or people consume information. And if I was to tell you a joke and you just like stood there deadpan, which to be honest is most of the jokes that I tell, then you have heard that joke, right? Yeah. If I told it to you and you laughed, then you've understood it. Mm-hmm. But if I tell it to you and you laugh and then you go and tell it to Tegan, then you've achieved the highest level of understanding and comprehension, which is that you get it to give it.
Yeah.
So you've gotten it and you can now give it to someone else. And the more simple technical concept is, like taking this big old complicated thing that is marketing and turning it into some really simple model that looks like a caterpillar that has five words in it, that's got circles and stuff. If you can understand that at a level to communicate it with someone else, then what more could you ask when it comes to, you know, a model and a framework? So that is the hierarchy of understanding, and that's why we have spent years trying to boil down a really complicated industry into such a simple model.
Great. So we do have some questions that we've been sent. Would you like to talk about that element of the framework that you were going to talk about, or do you want to dive into questions?
No, let's go into questions.
Questions first? Yep. Okay. So the first question we received is, if I want to implement this marketing model for my business, what do I do with the marketing I already have underway? Do I just abandon it and use this model instead?
Okay. So this is an interesting one, because as we start going into more technical parts of the, well, not technical, because I promise it wouldn't be technical. As we start going into the method behind what I need you guys to do to implement this model, I do ask to abandon everything that you're currently doing.
Right.
And focus on beating your bottlenecks instead. It's a really...
It's probably hard for some people to a bit of pill to swallow almost.
Yeah. So the reason that we say to do this is, you might be right now spending money on, you know, Google ads, but your bottleneck is actually in your product delivery system and you've got customers leaving left, right and center. If you can abandon the Google ads for now and spend that money instead fixing the bottleneck that's further down the system, then it's going to end up way better in the end, because any money that you then spend on Google ads is going to mean you end up with more customers in the system as they work their way through. Okay. That's the premise. It's hard to abandon stuff that's already working. If you want to keep going with it, you can. Like, it's fine. As long as you fix the bottleneck, that's kind of important. What we do find is a lot of businesses, we call it a buckshot kind of approach rather than a shotgun approach.
Okay.
So when we start talking about marketing channels that attract strangers and turn them into visitors, we're going to go through all the different ways of attracting strangers. And a lot of businesses have 10 or 12 half done or a quarter done or 5% done. And those are the ones I want you to abandon. I think we said a couple of weeks ago, I would rather see no LinkedIn page than a LinkedIn page with a post from 7 months ago.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, is abandon that, delete it.
Yeah. If you're not doing it well, stop doing it. Get rid.
That's the problem. If you're not actively targeting and focusing on certain marketing methods and giving them 105%, then why would you waste your time?
Like, yeah.
You don't know whether it's working or not working. I speak to so many people that will say, Instagram doesn't work for my business. Like, I can't get any traction. People aren't doing stuff. Then I say, well, what are you actively doing on Instagram? And unless you can really commit to it, get to know the channel, experiment with different messages, learn as much as you can, find people that can help you, all that stuff, you really can't make the call on whether it works for your business or not without giving it that attention.
You have to be fully invested for it to work and to pay off the way you want it to.
Yeah. So if you're currently using Instagram and you're not gaining the traction that you want, it's not generating leads for your business, you don't know if it's generating leads for your business, just stop. Work your way through this system and then see where you end up at the end. Because if you then look at it again, you undertake the investigation that we put forward in our bullseye exercise, in the marketing, you know, turning strangers into visitors component, and you want to reintroduce it, you absolutely can. But I guarantee you will go into it with more confidence and direction than if you let it kind of sit there.
Mm-hmm.
So that is some advice I would like to put out there. It's not always going to work for every business. I don't want you to completely stop your growth if it's going to take you a couple months to introduce this, but it is something I would definitely look at.
And that sort of leads us on to the next question that we've received. And we're talking about, you know, people are all doing the most and across multiple channels, doing ads, paying for this, paying for that. The next question is, I have no budget for marketing at all. Is there any point continuing?
Yes, definitely. This model doesn't assume you're always going to have money to execute certain things. Mm-hmm. And goodness, technology has made marketing so much easier and harder at the same time. If you guys don't use something like Canva to do design work, then I would definitely recommend that you get onto that. There are so many freelancing tools like Fiverr and Freelancer and Upwork and all that kind of stuff where you can find people to help you do certain technical tasks for very little money.
Airtasker.
There's so many really cool places that can help you stretch a very minimal budget and turn that into marketing stuff. But everything that we've talked about so far in terms of beating your bottlenecks, a lot of them don't require any money to be spent at all. A lot of it can be done yourself as a founder. And I know that that's not always going to be the best use of your time. And that is something to consider. If you are going to spend, we talk about this with websites a lot. There are a lot of DIY website builders out there that are amazing. Wix and Squarespace and Shopify and all that. Anyone can create their own website. But if it takes you 50 hours to build your website, and let's be honest, that's a lot of time, but not a lot when it comes to building a website. Mm-hmm. I've met people that have spent 200 hours putting together a website on Shopify. What could you spend that 200 hours on instead?
And what is that time worth when it's being taken away from another element of your business?
Exactly. Yeah. So if you look at this and go, I don't have a budget at all. Yes, you can do it yourself, but remember that your time is also a cost. So keep that in mind when you do come up to stuff that is going to involve your effort and energy. But if you break down the model and you find out where your bottlenecks are and you focus on beating that, a lot of the stuff in there doesn't cost any money. If you're looking at your product delivery model, study it. See how you're delivering your products. Are they consistent? Do you need to improve? All that kind of stuff doesn't cost money. Customer service doesn't cost money. Like, there's a lot of things you can implement that are going to be free but could really change what you do. So if you don't have a budget, start with the free stuff. Work out your bottleneck, look at it, and then when things do cost money, figure out either how you can do it yourself and what that cost is going to be, or how you can engage someone else for the least amount of money, I suppose.
I guess it's like when you're investing in anything, you want to get a full understanding of what you need, an understanding of who can provide that service, and weigh up whether the benefits outweigh the costs or whether the costs outweigh the benefits.
Definitely.
The next question is, what is a conversion rate and how do I find it for my business?
Okay, so in between each of these five touch points is a conversion rate. We have talked about this a bit, I believe.
A little bit, yes. I think maybe if we could just break it down
great
a little bit.
It's
simpler,
a hard one,
I guess.
So because it's a system, and you are, I guess the word funnel, I guess, is going to make a lot of sense again here, but not a vertical funnel. What I'd like you to imagine is a really big triangle facing the right.
I always imagine a fishing net.
Okay, you can imagine a fishing net. Cool. Yeah. So you've got people coming in from the left. They are strangers. And all the way down the end, when it comes to your fans, there's obviously going to be a very small point because not everyone is going to make their way through. The number of people that drop off and versus the number of people that continue from one touch point to the next is the conversion rate.
Okay.
And that's normally a percentage. For your business, you can work out what your conversion rates are at every single touch point. And that is how you determine whether your marketing is working or not working.
Can you give us a specific example for a conversion rate between two of these points within this system?
So the easiest one to find is your website conversion rate. And I will explain how. It's really hard sometimes to find these numbers if you are not that comfortable with your digital analytics tracking tools. But finding them isn't hard if you want to. So you can, like I said, go onto Fiverr or Freelancer or ask someone to help you grab them. From your website, you can track the number of visitors with Google Analytics and you can see how many users are hitting your website. And then, hopefully, you'll be able to track how many people are inquiring with your business every month or week or whatever the period is.
Yeah.
So whether you are doing that through Google Analytics and setting up a goal and tracking events and conversions, or whether you're just writing them down in an Excel document or using a CRM, you can compare the number of users that visited your website to the number of inquiries you got that month. That's your conversion rate. Cool. The average conversion rate, good conversion rate for a website, is between 2 and 5%.
So it's quite low.
Very low.
Yeah.
If you're hitting those numbers, you're probably doing pretty well, but it can always be better. There's no reason that your conversion rate can't be better than that.
Yeah.
But if you're performing less than that, like if it's working out less, there could be a lot of reasons why. It could be that your website needs some work. It could be your bottleneck. There might be, you might not be explaining your concepts very clearly. You might not have good call to actions. You might not have an enticing offer. You might not explain to someone what happens when they get in contact. Maybe you don't even have a contact button or a contact form. It's figuring out how your website can be improved and then also making sure that you get into the habits of measuring and recording how many people are actually inquiring so you know the answer to that. So that is one conversion rate, and it's a really easy one because it's quite straightforward.
Yeah, that
is. The other really easy one is towards the end, and that is how many customers are turning into fans. I might have mentioned this one a couple of weeks ago, but what we want here is to get survey feedback from customers after they've become a customer.
Yeah.
And it could be straight after, it could be a year after, whatever it is, it has to be consistent. And often we use the Net Promoter Score survey to determine how many customers are turning into fans. And that's just who gives you a 9 and a 10 or a 10 out of 10. Quite high.
Yeah.
But you can assume that anyone that gives you a 9 or a 10 is a real lifetime customer and a fan.
And if they've had if they've had a lot of interactions with the business and they've had a lot of opportunities to be confident in giving that score, there's no reason why they wouldn't. I'm going to cough again.
That's okay.
So sorry.
So that's a really good conversion rate to track because that's going to give you an idea of whether your customers that you're delivering your products to are happy or not. Mm-hmm. And then you can work out why they're not.
Yeah.
So setting up a survey like a Net Promoter Score survey, that could be something you do online, or it could be just giving them all a call and finding out how everything went. If you can then work out who is an advocate for your business and then who just kind of buys their products and kind of goes, mm-hmm. you'll get a pretty good idea of how many fans are going through, and then you could spend money or not spend money and spend time instead on improving that conversion rate. Sure. So conversion rates, I guess they're not the same throughout the whole system. Sometimes they're hard to find, but focusing on them and identifying them can be done quantitatively by finding those numbers like we talked about, or it could be even done qualitatively, which is getting a sense of where your business is based on certain questions about each of those touch points, which is a really good way to finish off this episode. What we've done over the last number of years is we've used quantitative numbers and qualitative questions to examine where a business's bottlenecks are, and then we've tried to identify exactly what qualitative, when I say qualitative, I mean questions that don't have numbers attached to them.
Yeah.
We've tried to identify what qualitative questions mirror up to the numbers that we've been able to produce for that business.
Yeah,
so that we could finalize a list of questions that will tell you exactly where your bottleneck is without actively examining those conversion rates. And I have those questions and I have that exercise for everyone to complete. And that is what we call the bottleneck quiz. So if you are wondering where your bottleneck is, you can jump onto our website, verygoodmarketing.com.au, and take the bottleneck quiz, and it'll tell you exactly where your bottleneck is, and it will tell you exactly what you need to focus on next. So over the next number of months, we're going to start diving into each of the touch points.
Yeah.
If your bottleneck, and we're going to go through them sequentially, so you might have to wait a little until yours comes up, but I would recommend listening to all of the episodes anyway.
You might identify a bottleneck that you didn't really
realize that you had. Want to implement some of the recommendations, but whatever you end up with at the end of the quiz, you might end up with your bottleneck being turning strangers to visitors or from visitors to leads. You can tune into those particular episodes and figure out how to unblock that bottleneck. The other thing that I'll send through is some quick tips or information about that particular bottleneck, stuff that can get you going right now as soon as you've taken the quiz, and hopefully you'll get a bit of value from it. So the bottleneck quiz is going to be a really big eye-opener. Even just answering the questions can help you think about your business in a different way.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thanks, Amy. And
my pleasure.
I look forward to talking to you next week.
Thanks, Shannon.